right now. I want to talk some Ducks football. You've basically been an integral part of every level of football, minus the pros, not to, you know, demean your career.
I have not.
But you have been a high school football player, a high school football coach. You have been a college football player. You have been a sideline reporter. You have covered the Ducks for this station and for the team for quite some time. It's a bottom-up sport in a lot of ways, where what happens at the high school and prep level made an impact on college football, especially with Chip Kelly and the Lightning offense and everything that they did, going, hey, these kids are coming out of high school. They don't know how to run a pro-style offense. We can get them into a system a lot quicker by simplifying things, speeding things up, use their athleticism, use all that. So there's a constant evolution of college offenses. And it's interesting when you look at the Oregon Ducks. They hired Dan Lanning as their head coach. He's the defensive coordinator of Georgia, who has this unstoppable defense, who has, you know, just won them a national championship, and you expect Oregon to become this defense-first team. In the first 3 years of Dan Lanning, top 10 offense. The defense that he inherited from Mario Cristobal was the 75th overall offense or defense. Then the defense he has in his first year also ranks 75th. It improves to 37th. And then improves to a top 10 defense in year two, in year three. So it's interesting to look at the way this team is built, and you could very easily assume that it is an offense first team. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think because offenses evolve so much, it feels like it's a lot harder for defenses to catch up. You have to really stock the cupboard with talent. You really have to get everybody on the same page. You have to figure out a system. It takes more continuity. Am I close on that at all?
Yeah. I mean, the trickle up from the high school levels in even lower all the way up to college football, and it's gotten into the NFL, is very real. And the fact that, like, Oregon has this identity of being offensive innovators, right? And, yep. And it goes back, and it predates just Chip Kelly. But throwing the ball around in the 70s with Dan Fouts was, I mean, it has always been about offense. They weren't very good then. but it has always been about offense at Oregon. And they hired a defensive head coach in Lanning, and everybody after 1 year was like, see, this is the worry of having a defensive coach, because you have a great offense with Kenny Dillingham who gets through to Bo Nix, and it's like, well, he's gone. He's a head coach somewhere.
Yep.
He goes out and he hires Will Stein, and now you have continuity with Stein coming back again, which is huge for having him for a third year, and especially when you're developing your offense and your quarterbacks. But if you look at the way offenses are built, they have they operate under if-then.
Yep.
If the defense does this, then we have this to counter. And that makes coaching on the defensive side of the ball and being a very good defense insanely difficult to do.
Yeah.
So then it comes to what you were talking about, and building your team and recruiting on the defensive side of the ball. We look at Ohio State won the national championship this past year. And everybody talked about, you know, Jeremiah Smith, Carnell Tate, Emeka Buka. You know, they had two running backs with Henderson and Judkins. But we also forget that they had Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau and Tyleek Williams, and the way that he played down the stretch at the end of that season. You look at Lathan Ransom in the secondary, and just how good with Denzel Burke and Cody Simon. Like, Caleb Downs, for God's sakes, is one of the best defenders in all of college football. He was on that Ohio State team.
They do not get talked about nearly as much.
And you mentioned,
is that just a bias that we have as fans? It's a lot easier to root for offense because the individual stats matter more?
Well, it's talking about what the offense wasn't able to do more so than what the defense did, because that's easier to dissect and it's easier to get through, right? If you like, the Rose Bowl is a great example of this. Everybody was talking about, dude, Jeremiah Smith is just indefensible. You can't do it, right? Or Emeka Buka, and how is he getting this open? Like, he is just wide open. It's scheme. And some of it is.
Yeah.
It's the setup and the scheme. But it was also your back end of your defense was slow to rotate. And there was a lot of what Oregon didn't do in that game, just as much as it was Ohio State and what they were able to do. Every great team has got a great offense. That is full stop.
Yeah.
But all of the teams that win national titles, they are built on the defensive side of the ball, including that Ohio State team last year, which was phenomenal. And sure, they took their lumps at times, but That was a stifling defense at the end of the year. Georgia, Alabama, those Clemson teams, yeah, right? Even with Trevor Lawrence, those defenses were littered with first-round picks.
Well, and it's wild, too, because if you look at Ohio State, year seven of Ryan Day last year, finally to get a national championship, he inherited a national championship-caliber talent pool. So he has all the runway in the world. If you look at Kirby Smart, and I was just looking for a comparison to Dan Lanning, and if you look at Kirby Smart, when he took over for Mark Richt, that was the 17th best defense in football.
Yeah.
In college football, and it ballooned to 37th best the first year of Kirby Smart. It took him time to kind of build it back and get it where not only he had a defense that was good enough, but deep enough to win a national championship. I mean, I can remember watching Clemson when they were really rolling. It felt like at the end of every game, whoever they were playing was absolutely exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And here was Clemson running in their second wave of defensive linemen that were all going to the NFL. When Mario Cristobal started getting the first five-star guys to sign with Oregon, in the same offseason, Clemson would add 8. Georgia would add 9. Yeah. Alabama would add 10. And having that depth, and it feels like the defensive side of the ball where you can play in rotating shifts and run in a whole nother set of defensive linemen. The secondary can grow to 6 guys, shrink down to 4, and still be able to cover a back end against a guy like Jeremiah Smith is not an easy task.
Yeah, and look, the whole if-then that offenses operate with, defenses, you have to be able to adapt with, okay, we will change our if. If the defense does this, then the offense does that. All right, we'll change it. And that is where all of the great teams, and you see it does take time, especially on the defensive side of the ball, to get that. And it's really interesting because you place the varieties of offense are so widespread across college football that you have teams that are big, long, physical. You have teams that play with speed. You have teams that want to spread you out, teams that want to play in a phone booth. So you have to build your defense in a way that has a counterpunch to everything that you'll see. And I think that that's kind of been the interesting part about what we've seen with Dan Lanning building that defense, and the transfer portal has helped that tremendously, right? Like Derek Harmon last year is a prime example of that. Jabbar Muhammad, you know, Tysheem Johnson, who is in the secondary, Kobe Savage in the secondary last year. Those guys were huge transfer portal pickups that it was like, oh, okay, well, you can add that counterpunch to whatever teams are going to do, and you're seeing that with the way that they built their defense this year.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the names because, as we go through, and you know, it took us 2 days to talk about the defense. That's kind of the bias that we all have towards it.